Today is May 20th, 2026, and you're listening to the World Socialist Website. G7 imperialist governments line up behind Trump's threats against Iran as global war escalates, by Jordan Shilton. U.S. President Donald Trump menaced Iran with another military onslaught on Tuesday, declaring, "We may have to hit them one more time," just hours after claiming to have paused an imminent resumption of the bombardments of Iran. Trump asserted that the U.S. military was locked and loaded, and that he could make a decision on whether to attack by early next week. Trump's gangster-like threats are the authentic voice of world imperialism, which is determined to impose colonial chains on Iran and the entire region as part of the new redivision of the world among the major powers that is already well underway. The communique released by the G7 finance ministers yesterday, after 2 days of consultations in Paris, underscores this fact, with all members signing onto a statement that blamed the victim of the criminal U.S.-Israeli war of aggression for the economic disaster it has produced. The finance ministers and central bankers from Britain, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, and the U.S. insisted that, quote, "a swift return to free and safe transit through the Strait of Hormuz and a lasting resolution to the conflict are imperative," end quote. While not uttering a word about the unprovoked onslaught on Iran, launched as negotiations were still ongoing on the 28th of February, or the thousands of Iranian civilians slaughtered by the indiscriminate American and Israeli bombing, the G7 finance ministers, displaying typical imperialist double standards, hypocritically began their main communique with their statements, quote, "We are united in our condemnation of Russia's continued brutal war against Ukraine and the escalatory actions aimed at undermining collective efforts to broker peace," end quote. The glaring inconsistency of the imperialist's moral outrage manages to consistently coincide with the global predatory interests they are pursuing. American imperialism is determined to regain the domination over Iran it lost following the 1979 revolution, as part of a drive to consolidate its hegemony over the energy-rich Middle East, by sidelining its rivals, above all China. The European imperialists have endorsed the war because they hope to secure their own share of the spoils with a revival of the barbaric methods associated with colonialism, and because they require continued U.S. support for their war against Russia. The government supposedly engaged in collective efforts to broker peace are in fact the chief protagonist in a rapidly escalating Third World War. Trump traveled to Beijing last week to meet with Chinese President Xi Jinping in what was billed as a summit to stabilize relations between the world's two largest economies. But behind the diplomatic niceties, the American financial oligarchy for which Trump speaks has no intention of permitting China's steady economic rise at the expense of the U.S., and is openly preparing for war with China. Trump's failure to reach any substantial agreement in Beijing is now being followed just days later with another round of threats on the part of Trump to exterminate Iran, which not coincidentally is one of China's most important oil suppliers. The erratic outbursts by Trump and frequent explosions of militarist violence are indications of U.S. imperialism's weakness, not its strength. For the past 35 years, Washington has sought to, under successive administrations, to offset its precipitous economic decline by deploying brutal military force. This uninterrupted series of wars has only deepened American imperialism's crisis, both by aggravating social tensions to the breaking point and exacerbating the rivalries between the imperialist powers as they compete to secure markets, raw materials, cheap labor, and strategic influence under conditions of a worsening world capitalist breakdown. Imperialism, whether of the American or European variety, can offer no way out of the crisis other than by further escalating wars. Trump's threats to resume the war on Iran have been punctuated with discussions on whether he will order an invasion of Cuba, which the White House is now absurdly accusing of playing host to Iranian military advisors and possessing 300 drones supplied by Russia and Iran. Military operations on the Caribbean island, aimed at toppling the Castroite regime, would mark the second U.S.-led regime change operation in Latin America in less than 6 months, following January's invasion of Venezuela to abduct President Nicolas Maduro and try him as a common criminal in a New York courtroom. Trump may be plotting a parallel scenario to seize the 94-year-old Raul Castro, who will reportedly soon be indicted in a U.S. court. In Europe, the continent's imperialist powers are fueling the war on Russia, a nuclear-armed power, with reckless abandon. Germany, in particular, has taken the lead in assisting Ukraine to develop drone technology and supplying it with long-range weaponry capable of hitting targets deep inside Russia. Kiev has felt emboldened over recent weeks to strike high-rise residential buildings in Moscow and energy infrastructure. These provocative acts of aggression, which have only increased after the Kremlin's threat earlier this year to bomb manufacturing facilities in NATO countries, are designated to produce a retaliatory strike by Russia that can be exploited as a justification to expand the war. The European imperialist powers are subordinating all of society's resources to waging war, with Germany approving 1 trillion euros for war spending and all NATO members committing to allocating 5% of their GDP for the military. The destruction of public services and workers' rights needed to fund this mad rearmament drive is being justified with hysterical anti-Russian propaganda. Carsten Brewer, the top commander of the German armed forces, declared in a joint interview with his British counterpart in the Süddeutsche Zeitung that Russia, which has proven incapable after 4 years of war to conquer even half of Ukraine's territory, could attack a NATO country by 2029. Europe's rearmament drive is not only aimed at Russia, but is motivated at the most fundamental level by the ruling class's recognition that U.S. imperialism, long an ally, is now a rival in the struggle to carve up the world among the major powers. The sharpening of inter-imperialist antagonisms and acceleration of a Third World War confirm that the same basic features of capitalism identified by Lenin in his analysis of imperialism apply today with full force. Lenin wrote at the height of the bloody slaughter of World War I, quote, "Monopolies, oligarchy, the striving for domination, and not for freedom, the exploitation of an increasing number of small or weak nations by a handful of the richest or most powerful nations, all these have given birth to those distinctive characteristics of imperialism, which compel us to define it as parasitic or decaying capitalism." End quote. This understanding was central to Lenin's conception of the epoch as one of wars and revolutions, that is, not only a period of imperialist reaction, but one in which crisis-ridden capitalism had created the objective conditions for the working class to offer a socialist road out of the impasse. The same capitalist contradictions propelling all of the imperialist powers to engage in world war are driving the only social force that can stop this catastrophe into struggle: the international working class. The U.S.-instigated war on Iran has already, within less than 3 months, triggered sharp spikes in energy, fuel, and food prices. Strikes and protests have involved workers across continents, from the ongoing national strikes against price rises in Kenya and Bolivia, to Monday's one-day national strike that hit wide swaths of the Italian economy against war and the Gaza genocide. The intensification of the class struggle demonstrates the urgency of the fight to build an international anti-war movement on the basis of a revolutionary socialist program. The initial anger among workers expressed in the strikes, must be developed into conscious opposition to imperialist war, linking the fight to defend jobs and living standards with the struggle against imperialist barbarism and the capitalist system that is its root cause. This movement must end the domination of society by the financial oligarchy and its relentless quest for profit and plundering by setting as its goals the conquest of political power by the working class and the socialist transformation of society. Turkey unveils its first intercontinental ballistic missile amid an intensifying imperialist war by Hasan Yildirim. Held in Istanbul on the 5th of May, the Saha Expo, the International Defense, Aviation, and Space Industry of 2026 fair, reflected Turkey's efforts to showcase its military technologies. The fair was attended by over 1,700 companies from more than 120 countries, over 140 official delegations, and more than 200 commercial procurement delegations attended. The exhibition featured a variety of armed, unmanned aerial vehicles, or UAVs, air defense systems, electronic warfare technology, and AI-enabled defense technology. Baykar unveiled a new AI-enabled UAV with a 1,000-kilometer range, while Roketsan showcased four missiles. The Yildirimon missile, which is currently under development by the Ministry of National Defense's R&D Directorate and has not yet been tested, was the most attention-grabbing item at the fair and made headlines in the international press. With a range of 6,000 kilometers, the Yildirimon is Turkey's first intercontinental ballistic missile, or ICBM, and can carry a payload of up to 3,000 kilograms. Its ability to reach speeds of Mach 25 and perform sudden maneuvers classifies it as a hypersonic missile. An article published in The Bulwark interpreted this development as a symbol of the dismantling of the liberal international order that was underpinned by U.S. military power. It comments that Turkey, which boasts the second largest land army in NATO, is now declaring that it can target not only its neighbors, but potentially all continents. According to Kuwa, a Pakistan-based defense news website, the Yildirimon ICBM program has achieved domestic production of its liquid fuel propellants. The objective across all of these tracks is to ensure no single foreign supplier can shut down a Turkish weapons program by withholding an engine or a propellant. End quote. The Yildirimon missile is just one of Turkey's initiatives in the defense industry. In recent years, the country has made significant strides in unmanned aerial vehicles, or UAV technology, as exemplified by the Bayraktar TB2. It is also developing an air defense system called the Steel Dome, similar to Israel's Iron Dome system, while developing the KAAN, a new generation fighter jet. It has launched two large amphibious assault ships, the TCG Anadolu and the TCG Trakya. Turkey's domestic tank project, the Altay, entered army service in 2025. The government of President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is investing heavily in the defense industry, both to equip the Turkish armed forces and to expand arms exports. According to an analysis published by TRT World, Turkey's defense exports exceeded $10 billion in 2025, marking a 48% increase. Turkish-made UAVs played a significant role in Azerbaijan's victory over Armenia in the Nagorno-Karabakh War. Turkey is also helping Ukraine produce and supply UAVs for its war with Russia. Despite the progress made by its defense industry in recent years, Turkey remains dependent on imports. Turkey imported 70% of its military equipment in 2002, a figure which dropped to 30% by 2024. However, the Independent Industrialists and Businessmen's Association's 2024 reports examples of import dependency, including semiconductors, processors, and engine and power transmission systems used in platforms such as the Altay main battle tank and the T-129 ATAK military helicopter, which is derived from the A-129 Mangusta. The cost of this success in the defense industry, the war economy, is being borne by the working class. While Turkey's defense spending has risen steadily over the past decades, wages have been eroded by chronic inflation. Meanwhile, the proportion of the budget allocated to education, healthcare, and other essential public services has declined. Amid the rhetoric about national defense, approximately 2,000 workers fall victim to workplace fatalities each year due to a lack of safety measures. The massacre that took place on the 24th of December, 2024, at an ammunition factory in Balıkesir, in which 11 workers lost their lives, is an example. When workers try to resist the assault on their working and living conditions, they find themselves facing an ever more repressive state apparatus. The recent detention of 110 miners in Ankara is one of the most striking examples of this. The massive investments made by the Erdogan government in Turkey's defense industry must be viewed in the context of the global war that is unfolding, Turkey's geopolitical position, and the interest of the Turkish ruling class. Since the dissolution of the Soviet Union in 1991, U.S. NATO imperialism has waged countless wars of aggression and regime change in the Middle East, Central Asia, and North Africa, aiming to establish complete domination over markets, resources, energy, and trade routes. NATO's eastward expansion has provoked a war with Russia and Ukraine. In response to its long-term decline and China's economic rise, the U.S. is attempting to place Beijing's critical trading partners, such as Venezuela and Iran, under a colonial yoke, and is essentially preparing for war with China. The fact that the interests of the Turkish bourgeoisie are tied to imperialist powers through thousands of military, financial, and political connections, coupled with Turkey's geographical location at the center of many of these flashpoints, inevitably draws it into the vortex of these wars. Turkey was one of the key supporters of the war for regime change in Syria. Meanwhile, NATO's war against Russia is showing signs of spreading into Turkish territorial waters in the Black Sea. The U.S.-Israel war against neighboring Iran also poses a risk of drawing Turkey into the conflict. Although Ankara is calling for a ceasefire and a negotiated solution in Ukraine and Iran, in practice, it is siding with the U.S. and NATO in their aggressive actions. While Ankara condemns Iran's self-defense measures, the bases in Turkey continue to serve U.S. interests. Following the outbreak of war, NATO's Patriot air defense systems were deployed to the Incirlik and Kurusik bases. However, the Erdogan government fears that its imperialist allies might target it as well during certain points of conflict and is therefore striving to develop a more independent defense industry. The failed NATO-backed coup attempt targeting Erdogan in 2016 was a critical turning point. Ankara viewed the U.S. move to make Kurdish militias its primary proxy force during the war for regime change in Syria as a direct threat to its border security. Ankara's policy of maneuvering between the U.S.-NATO alliance and China and Russia further escalates tensions, which erupted violently in the 2016 NATO-backed failed coup attempt targeting Erdogan. Following the suppression of the coup, Turkey purchased S-400 air defense systems from Russia. But during the first Trump administration, Congress imposed CAATSA sanctions on Turkey. Turkey was excluded from the F-35 fighter jet program. While the sanctions remain in place, the S-400 systems that have entered the inventory of the Turkish armed forces remain idle at the request of the U.S. Amid the deepening rift between the U.S. and Europe, the Erdogan government is seeking to strengthen its cooperation with the Trump administration, while also working to bolster its ties with European allies. As part of the Coalition of the Willing against Russia, Turkey has established a naval headquarters in Istanbul with Britain and France. There are growing calls for European powers to leverage Turkey's geopolitical position and its burgeoning defense industry. Turkey is also engaged in a growing regional competition with both Israel and its NATO ally, Greece. While Israel receives substantial military aid and political support as the U.S.'s spearhead in the Middle East, Greece has significantly expanded and modernized its air force. Greece has served as a key base, particularly in NATO's war against Russia. Last December, Israel, Greece, and Cyprus held a summit in Jerusalem. The leaders agreed to deepen trilateral cooperation in, quote, security, defense, and military matters to protect, quote, critical regional infrastructure in the Mediterranean. The Greek City Times reported that the Yildirimon has caused serious concerns in Greece and Israel. Israeli analyst Shai Gal wrote, quote, Turkey is not building missiles simply to defend its territory, but is building range to determine who lives under Turkish pressure. End quote. Israeli intelligence services assess that missiles with such a range are ultimately designed to carry nuclear warheads. While the competition and tension between Turkey, Israel, and Greece are real, Ankara's efforts to develop its defense industry have nothing to do with anti-imperialism. A government serving the interest of the Turkish bourgeoisie has neither the capacity nor the will to oppose imperialism. These forces bear responsibility for dragging Turkey into the vortex of war, and far from defending the people, are preparing to drive workers and youth into war for reactionary interest. The only social force capable of resisting imperialist war is an international working class that has secured its independence from its own ruling class and state. In Turkey, this requires uniting Kurdish and Turkish workers with their class brothers and sisters in the Middle East and internationally on a socialist program grounded in their common class interest, freeing them from the grip of nationalist and religious ideologies, and building their own revolutionary political leadership, the Socialist Estilik Partisi. The Socialist Equality Party from the Fourth International is fighting for this perspective. Zelensky's former chief of staff, released from jail on $3.2 million bail amid corruption charges, by Jason Melanovsky and Clara Weiss. On Monday, May 11th, Andriy Yermak, the former chief of staff of Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky, was officially named as a suspect by the Ukraine's anti-corruption court last Monday in the massive scandal and then formally charged and arrested on Thursday. He is charged of, among other things, being involved in a corruption scandal surrounding a $10.5 million luxury construction project outside the Ukrainian capital, Kiev. Shortly before the court hearing, Yermak told reporters, quote, I do not have any house. I only have one flat and one car. On Monday, he was released from jail after posting a $3.2 million bail. For years, Yermak had been one of the most influential political figures in Ukraine, dubbed by some the shadow cardinal behind Zelensky. Yermak and Zelensky have been close allies and friends for about 15 years. The corruption scandal reveals the intensity of the political conflict within the Ukrainian ruling class and the depths of its corruption amidst a war that has claimed the lives of hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian workers and youth, destroying the lives of millions more. The scandal first engulfed the Zelensky regime in November 2025, when staff from Ukraine's National Anti-Corruption Bureau of Ukraine, NABU, raided Yermak's apartment as part of an investigation into a $100 million scheme case known as Operation Midas. According to the allegations, several leading members of the Ukrainian government and a close business associate of both Zelensky and Yermak were involved in an embezzlement scheme centering around EnergoAtom, the state nuclear company. Energy Minister Svitlana Hrinchuk and Justice Minister Herman Holoschenko were forced to resign. Revelations indicated that they had received kickback payments worth 10 to 15% of contract values from contractors building fortifications on Ukraine's energy infrastructure. In addition to Mindich, former Deputy Prime Minister Oleksiy Chernyshov is also a well-known Zelensky friend and ally, and was accused of receiving over $1.2 million in cash by Nabuu. Yermak later resigned under immense pressure from Ukraine's Western imperialist backers, but was not formally charged until now. Last year, shortly before the corruption scandal erupted, the Financial Times, a mouthpiece of British financial capital, published a lengthy expose on Yermak, quoting multiple US and EU officials who were upset about his political role. However, despite his fall from grace and the naming of a new chief of staff, Yermak reportedly continued to play an important role in the right-wing dictatorial regime and was regularly seen leaving Zelensky's office. Other alleged accomplices in the scheme include former Deputy Prime Minister Oleksiy Chernyshov and Timur Mindich. Mindich is a close Zelensky and Yermak associate and a co-owner of Zelensky's former TV studio, Krivotal 95. According to the newest allegations, apart from any role he may have played in the Energoatom embezzlement, Yermak was involved in laundering funds into a luxury real estate development near Kiev, valued at around $10.5 million. The complex was reportedly owned by Mindich, Yermak, Chernyshov, and a yet unnamed partner, possibly Zelensky himself or another high-ranking member of his government. Yermak allegedly also contacted an astrologer to consult on potential government appointments. Adding to the rapidly expanding scandal, Ukraine's Public Anti-Corruption Council recently called for the removal of Ukrainian Defense Minister Rustem Umerov for his alleged involvement with Mindich-owned drone manufacturer known as Firepoint. As the Anti-Corruption Council reported in a statement on the investigation, quote, "The public has been presented with unverified but credible evidence of links between former Ukrainian Defense Minister Rustem Umerov, sanctioned businessman Timur Mindich, and the company Firepoint," end quote. The statement came just days after the newspaper Ukrainska Pravda released audio tapes in which Umerov and Mindich can be heard discussing selling a 33% stake in Firepoint to foreign investors. The context of the conversation suggests that Umerov was personally involved in Firepoint and would financially benefit from the sale. Mindich and his other close business associates, the Ukrainian oligarch Igor Kolomovsky, were instrumental in bringing Zelensky to power in 2019. During the presidential campaign, Zelensky used Mindich's personal armored car for travel. The Ukrainian president also owned a high-end apartment in the same building as Mindich, where Nabuu investigators discovered a gold-plated bathroom that Mindich had built for himself. Mindich fled to Israel shortly before the Nabuu raid. As the allegations have continued to snowball, it is impossible to believe that Zelensky, Yermak, and Umerov were unaware of Mindich's massive embezzlement scheme. The current scandal has been exacerbated by the fact that last July, Zelensky, likely already aware of the massive embezzlement and robbery endemic to his government, had moved to limit the power of the Nabuu and SAP, leading to the largest protest across the country since the beginning of the NATO-backed proxy war in February 2022. Zelensky claimed that stripping the agency of its independence was necessary to combat, quote, Russian influence. At the same time, Ukraine Security Services, the SBU, which is aligned with Zelensky, had carried out raids of Nabuu to supposedly arrest Russian spies. The move triggered both domestic outrage and intervention from its Western backers, which strongly back Nabuu as a means to control Ukraine's domestic political apparatus. Zelensky ultimately was forced to backtrack and withdraw his attempt to take over Nabuu. But the very types of scandals Zelensky was seeking to head off through his control of Nabuu have now exploded, to shake his government just as domestic support for the war is eroding. The poll taken last summer showed that 70% of Ukrainians believe that their leaders used the war to enrich themselves. The latest revelations starkly confirm what workers have already understood. While the Ukrainian working class continues to die in droves at the front, the highly interconnected Ukrainian oligarchs and capitalist politicians are enriching themselves by robbing the state of hundreds of millions in a country where the average monthly salary is just $660. The arrest of Yermak, arguably Zelensky's closest ally, is a significant blow to Zelensky and directly raises the question of his own involvement in the corruption that permeated his government and inner circle. It also indicates that powerful sections of the Ukrainian ruling class and its imperialist backers are actively moving against him. For workers, important political conclusions flow from the ongoing corruption scandal. It demonstrates yet again that the war has nothing to do with the defending of the interests of the people of Ukraine and democracy. The ruling oligarchy has placed the country's working class and youth at the disposal of the imperialist powers for a war against Russia that they had planned and prepared for many years. The goal of the imperialist power is to plunder the resources not only of Russia, but the entire former Soviet Union, while playing the role as a handmaiden for imperialism. For the Ukrainian oligarchy, too, the war is above all a means to further enrich itself. But the scale of the corruption underscores that this is not simply a matter of bad apples. The oligarchy that now rules Ukraine, just as the oligarchy that rules Russia, has emerged from the Stalinist bureaucracy's destruction of the Soviet Union and the restoration of capitalism. This process involved the ruthless looting of state assets, the destruction of healthcare, education, and industries built by Soviet workers over decades, and the selling off of the country's raw material to the highest bidder. Corruption and plunder are not simply an aberration of individuals in the Zelensky government. They constitute the historical and social basis of the entire ruling class, whose social interest the Zelensky regime represents. Workers, therefore, must oppose all attempts to exploit these blatant cases of corruption, to channel support behind one or another faction of the ruling class that opposes Zelensky. A socialist opposition to the Zelensky government must be rooted in the fight to unify workers in Ukraine, Russia, and Europe in a common struggle to put an end to this war and the capitalist system as a whole. You can find all this and more at the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been Archie Stone for the World Socialist website.